good news for you now. You're joined by some great legal minds. President of the Law Society of Queensland, Bill Potts, is here. Also, Christine Smythe, one of Australia's foremost experts in elder law, in succession, funeral, cemetery law, all that sort of stuff. She's a consultant lawyer for Robbins Watson Solicitors. Thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime.
Let's launch straight in because thank you so much, dear listeners, for not being shy. And on line one, we've got Mary. G'day, Mary.
Hello.
What was your question?
A so-called friend asked me if she could lease part of my property and put on a fixed granny flat to operate her beauty business from. She's 53, I'm 70.
She don't need to give too many details. Won't be very anonymous in a second.
Okay.
No, I'm only kidding. Go ahead.
I don't want to do this, and I rang the council. I couldn't get a definitive answer from everything I've read. I think it's illegal, but I couldn't. I'd like to go back and say, I just simply said I'd have to think very hard about
it. All right, here's some legal ammunition for you. Go, Christine.
Okay. Hi, Mary. It's Christine Smythe here. Is the friend residing with you at the moment?
No.
Okay. Then it's your property. You don't need a reason to say no. Now, if somehow that's going to be awkward and difficult, there are bylaws in local government areas about businesses and the use of and setting up a business in a residential service area. So it would depend on what the council bylaws say about that. There are issues also associated with getting proper insurance to ensure that people are protected when they come onto the property. And the other issue is the construction of a building on your land. And once it gets constructed on the land, it becomes part of the land. So there becomes all sorts of issues around ownership of that. In effect, unless you go and see a lawyer and have it all drawn up prim and proper, it's fraught with danger and you're right to be nervous about it. But I would just simply respond with that it's operating a business from a residential area is legally complex and you don't believe that it's able to be done.
This is not a legal argument, but I personally would be saying not sure about all of the randos who'd be coming to
Absolutely.
My house.
Absolutely.
So that's not legal, but that would be, if you're looking for other ammunition, Mary, thank you so much for your call. It's interesting how friendships can become quite complicated when, you have these sort of rather permanent arrangements. G'day, Marcus. How are you? Marcus, are you there? Marcus, I'm having trouble catching you. Maybe you're away from... Oh, I see what the problem is. You know what? It's all my fault, Marcus. I do apologise. You there?
That's all right. I'm sure you've got a new panel to get used to.
Yes, that's right. And it's maybe into the sixth hour of broadcasting, so...
It's quite a marathon.
Go ahead. What was your question?
All right. My question's a body corp question about recovering overdue levies. I'm secretary of a body corp. It's a standard module. And we've had an owner sell in the last couple of weeks. And when we gave the buyer the information certificate and showed them that there's a debt from six previous levies that the previous committee and body corp manager never recovered, and now we're the new committee, the seller disputed this. So the money that they have claimed, which is in the low four figures, has been put into, trust with the seller's solicitor for a month while we work it out, and as a committee. Now, the committee, most of them agree that we should be consistent like we always have and, recover the money because the person was overdue, but one person disagrees, and there's kind of, fanning the flames that go on in committee of indecision, and so the committee arrived at a decision to refer the matter to the buyers and sellers solicitors to decide. And I thought, well, that's a little bit strange because I'm pretty sure the relevant legislation says it's up to the committee to decide, and I didn't know that how they could delegate that. So I just wanted to know from your brains trust what they might suggest is the best way to go forward from here.
Okay, Marcus, Christine here. You're right. It is the responsibility of the committee. They can't delegate it to third parties. If you want to recover the monies and people aren't negotiating with you as to a proper resolution, you're left with pursuing your rights in the courts. It's as simple as that. Otherwise, you could be fighting over this for years.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you very much. That's what I was thinking too.
You're listening to ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland. Kate O'Toole is my name, and here in the studio are a couple of brilliant legal minds, and you can basically have them at your disposal for the next 15 minutes or so. So do get calling if you're interested, or of course you could send a text as well, 0467 922 612. Christine Smythe is here, consultant lawyer at Robbins Watson, and she's her expertise, by the way, if you're interested in a bit of, an idea or two, cremations, funerals, elder law, succession, all of those things. Bill Potts, I think, is slacking off a little bit, letting Christine do most of the work.
It's because I'm a criminal lawyer. We're very slack people.
But you can ask a question of him as well. He does have a very broad knowledge. We're just mucking around. Peter in Mackay is here. G'day.
You there?
Yep.
Just a quick question. I purchased an item from a plumbing business here a few weeks ago, and it was $50-odd, so I did an FBOS transaction on it. Anyhow, the girl took a long time to process it, and I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm just copying the end date of your card. And I thought, oh, that's funny. Anyway, I went away, and I went to another place and bought a similar item that was a better quality than what I had, so I took it back to the place that I bought it from. They refused to give me any refund until I gave them my name, my address, my phone number, and the only thing they didn't demand was my email address, which surprised me because they wanted everything else. And they copied every damn thing off my card, yet it had been done off an FPOS transaction. What rights do I have as a customer to say, no, that is none of your damn business because it was a cash transaction with an FPOS card?
The answer is you've got every right. Walk out. You don't have to give them any information. There are a number of circumstances where people have to provide information where, for example, it relates to, for example, money laundering or around conveyancing, things like that, where it's important that people know the details of who they're dealing with. But next thing you know, they'll want your hat size, shoe size and DNA. And what they're really doing is gathering information which they can then effectively use to either sell if they don't have privacy rules that you sign up to or consent to. That type of information is simply unnecessary. So the simple answer is, Peter, walk out.
So the person behind the counter, though, is doing what they've been told to do by their boss. So what are some of the handy words and phrases to know when you're met with a situation in a consumer-type environment that could, perhaps change the policy?
I always challenge them because this happens to me regularly. And I say, why? For example, recently I tried to book into a restaurant. They said, we have your email address. And I said, why do you need that? And they said, oh, to confirm the booking. I said, you don't need to confirm the booking except by telling me that I'm in. And it's that kind of slow accretion of detail about individuals that just simply has to be resisted. And the best way to simply say is challenge them. Why do you need it? And if they say, well, I'm sorry, it's our policy. Well, it's not your policy. You don't need to do it.
It can be helpful to say things like consumer law says, or the consumer organisations I'll report you to, or...
You can do all that, but I just don't see the need to debate or argue or challenge beyond simply saying I refuse to do it, and they've got no rights to it, so why would they insist?
But just to add to that, they refused to give me my money back unless I gave it to them. So I said, what if I paid cash? And they said, we still have information. And I was gobsmacked.
And you have every right to be.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like an acceptable situation. I think I would argue that one as well. Hello, Susan.
Hello. We've completed our wills, enduring power of attorney, did them in 2006 in New South Wales. We're now in the process of doing our advanced care forms. What are they called? Yeah, Advanced Health Directive, and wondered if our wills still applied in Queensland or do we have to do them again?
Okay. Hi, it's Susan, is it? Yes. Susan, It's not where you've done the will that's the issue. And so the short answer to your question is, unless your circumstances have dramatically changed since you did them in 2006, you don't need to redo the will for the purposes of Queensland. The relevant application of the law is that it's the law that applies where you die, typically. Now, the real issue for you isn't so much your will, but your enduring power of attorney. You've just indicated that you're about to execute what we call an advance health directive. The advance health directive only assists your family and loved ones with respect to your care in hospital in your unfortunately dying days. But your power of attorney is very state specific. We have very different legislation in Queensland to New South Wales. And while the Queensland legislation does have what we call mutual recognition, that is, we will mutually recognise a power of attorney from another jurisdiction, we only do that to the extent that it applies here. And Queensland power of attorney laws are some of the most extensive in the country. So I'd be strongly recommending that you review your enduring power of attorney and have a Queensland one.
As in your power of attorney may have more power than you originally intended because of the laws being different here? Or?
Yes. No, Queensland has some of the most extensive legislation in Australia. Our current power of attorney laws contain somewhere in the order of 165 provisions and 3 schedules. So it's quite extensive. It covers a broad range, whereas in New South Wales, it's not as extensive. And there are some quite significant differences in the legislation. So while the New South Wales power of attorney can be recognised here in Queensland, its limitations are from the fact that it will be a New South Wales document and will have those limitations attaching to it.
Could you give me some examples of why it's important to have the extent of that power of attorney nailed down, the sorts of scenarios where it can become a difficulty for
yes.
some reason?
Okay. One of the biggest issues is that in New South Wales, it is not automatic that your attorney can seek legal advice for and on your behalf, whereas it is included in the Queensland legislation. It's always recommended to put that into your power of attorney. And we also have very different laws with respect to what we call dealing with your property and the law of redemption and how that fits in with your will. So I strongly recommend you have your power of attorney reviewed. And if you did your will in 2006, is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And you would have changed properties and moved different properties?
Yes, we can.
Okay, so you might need to look at your will, because if you've gifted something specific away that no longer is in existence, then you may need to redo your will. And I'll give you a classic example. We had somebody who bought a unit in an apartment complex, and they specifically gave, say, for example, Unit 1 to their daughter Mary. They sold Unit 1 and bought Unit 2 right next door. Under the law, the specific gift of Unit 1 to Mary are deemed. It disappeared because she sold that gift and bought a different, sold that property and bought a different property.
So can in that circumstance, if that's not listed anywhere, does the executor have the full power to say, oh, I can see this is what they probably meant, or does it become a legal Barney?
A legal Barney.
Right. It's the technical word.
It's a very technical
You're
word.
You're on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland. Kate O'Toole is my name, and we're asking some thorny legal questions, including this question from Bev in Bundaberg. G'day.
Hello. How are you, Kate?
I'm very well, thanks.
Look, my husband and I, he died on the 2nd of July, and we jointly own property which consists of a small sugarcane farm, and we've got shares in the mill and also shares with sugar terminals. Our bank account was in joint names, and I thought it would be just as simple as showing up with the death certificate and a will and just having it all transferred into my name. But I decided to go to the local solicitor, and that was probably a good 4 to 5 weeks ago. And that was in the closest township of Childers. And on Tuesday, I got a letter from the solicitor that we've always dealt with has retired and sold out. And this has come from Bundaberg, and it's a disclosure notice and costs agreement, which I presume I have to sign before they do anything. But my family and I think it's rather preposterous that they've got that it could cost between $4,210 to $6,520 plus GST, and it also says it's not a quotation and it's subject to change. Now,
so I guess the question is it a, can you do it yourself, or do you need to get legal help through this? I guess that's the question, is it?
Okay, I can answer your question there, Bev. The answer is that no, it's not as simple as you thought, because effectively, notwithstanding you held everything in joint tenants, you still have to establish that you have a right to have that property transferred to you. Particularly with real property, you're only able to get your name registered on the title by going through the process of complying with the Department of Land Titles requirements.
So it's not the same, it's not just as simple as saying, here's the title that says it's got my name on it. And here's the will that says that everything he has is now belongs to me.
So, for example, anything that's held in joint tenancy isn't covered by the will. It falls outside of the will. But there are processes that third-party agencies require you to go through, and they're rather complicated, convoluted hoops that you have to jump through. They're time-consuming to jump through them. And so what you have to do in respect of real property, if it's jointly owned and there's no encumbrances on the property, then it's a process of what we call completing a transmission by death on that particular property. With respect to your bank accounts, it's about negotiating with the financial institutions. And unfortunately, in the wake of the Royal Commission into Financial Affairs, and also with respect to elder abuse, the financial institutions are putting people through greater hoops than they once did. So yes, it can be that expensive. In answer to your question about the cost disclosure, our requirements, our legislation requires us to disclose all of this information to you to give you an idea of what's involved. And yes, it does. It does cost that kind of money.
You're listening to ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.
Kate O'Toole is my name. It's 26 past 11. I hope you're well on this beautiful day across Queensland. Some storms possibly ahead in the mid-afternoon, we've heard in the southeast corner, but other than that, not too bad. And high temperatures, relatively speaking, above average temperatures across large parts of the state. But I hope you're enjoying your day here on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland. We're doing Legal Talk Back, a few interesting and somewhat thorny questions, which I guess as lawyers you are quite used to. Here in the studio with me, Bill Potts is the president of the Queensland Law Society. Christine Smythe is a consultant lawyer at Robbins Watson Solicitors. A whole lot of very interesting legal type of issues have come up during the week as well. Did you keep a close eye? I was interested in the courts in the UK, the UK Supreme Court, you know, saying that the Prime Minister, you know, maybe wasn't quite allowed to do that whole suspending Parliament thing, or asking the Queen to do the suspending Parliament thing. Do you, as a lawyer, is it exciting when the law, the whole machinery of the law, gets to tell the politicians to sit down?
Well, politicians make the law, then the courts effectively interpret and to a very large degree enforce it. And in this particular case, it shows one thing. The rule of law is how we describe our societies, and that is nobody, including the Prime Minister, is above the law, and everybody is subject to the same law, no matter how rich, no matter how high or low a position that they maintain. So in this case in England, Lady Hale, who's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, along with 10 other judges, so they sit completely together and said, look, you're wrong. You cannot prorogue Parliament, and the job of Parliament is to review legislation, to make legislation, and to conduct a public debate on behalf of the people who appoint them. So overall, this was very exciting, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Interesting to see that it was a unanimous decision as well, because I don't know that that was expected.
Well, it's not often. If you get 10 lawyers in a room, you're probably going to have 25 opinions.
Fair enough. What about an opinion on this? Darnell from Rockley has a question on legal access to grandchildren. Darnell?
Yes, hello. Good morning. Is that the case? Have I got any right to gain access or to have any contact with my grandchildren? There was a lot of toxicity given by the mother of...
I don't think we need to apportion any blame either way, but the situation is that you don't currently have any access. And
yes, that's the case. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. The way the law is framed is it's not about your rights, it's about the child's rights and about what is in the best interest of the child. As a matter of law, the parents are the ones who are the guardians of the child unless the law orders otherwise. So if you are being frustrated in access to your grandchild, you'd have to make an application to the family court to gain that access. Unfortunately, the family court system is not in a good state at the moment. So we would recommend you engage in some alternative dispute resolution and maybe get some mediators involved, family dispute resolution practitioners, to try and resolve the issues between you and the family.
Yeah, it's a very difficult area there, especially when relationships have soured and it's mediation is not always that easy. But interesting situation, Donnell. I know there's lots of people in your situation. Max in Rockhampton, g'day.
Good morning.
What's your question?
A neighbour shines a spotlight across the road at the house across the road and it lights up that whole house.
Right.
Is that legal?
Why is he doing it?
Oh, he reckons there's some security issue or something.
Okay. Right.
All right. So there may be some security issues, but they don't exist all of the time. So I can imagine if, for example, he sees a robber or a strange person that he could do so for a short period of time. But everybody has a right to effectively the presumption of privacy. And a light can be very annoying. It can be a nuisance. It can be something which can affect the enjoyment you have of your property. So the simple answer is this: yes, you've got an expectation of privacy, and no, a person can't consistently do that and either annoy you or harass you or effectively cause you harm. So in those circumstances, the best thing to do is to contact either a legal practitioner if it persists, but the first stop, the first shop to stop at is the local council to see if their bylaws inspectors will enforce the law and the bylaws that govern the city.
Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
Your question?
Yes, mine's a bit of a succession and wills. It used to be the case that a marriage nulled a previous will, but a divorce didn't. And this is for a family member who's, the wife died, the husband's remarried, and we're trying to work out whether the will is still in existence, the previous will that looked after his children is still in existence, or whether it needs to make a new will.
Okay, now we need to know, let's be clear, I'm speaking from Queensland law perspective.
Yep. Queensland, yeah.
Yes, sir, because succession law is state-based and this is quite critical for everyone to understand. It's not the case that a marriage or a divorce will annul the totality of the will. The law is, under the Succession Act of Queensland, that a marriage or a divorce will null the gift in the will to the former spouse or the appointment of the former spouse as an executor of the will. And only to that extent, the rest of the will still stands. Now, interestingly, most recently here in Queensland, we added another provision along those lines, and it's now the case that if you exit a de facto relationship, it also will negate the will to the extent it makes dispositions to the former spouse or an appointment of executor of the former spouse. Now, everyone has to be very careful because Queensland is the only state in Australia that has that exiting de facto relationship clause in their succession acts, and it doesn't exist in other states and territories.
So you could end up with your ex-partner being the executor of your will if you don't update your will. That's elsewhere.
No. So if you divorce
yes.
from your ex-partner and you've appointed your ex-partner as the executor, that appointment is nullified.
Yes.
So it stops. And you may end up with a will that doesn't have an executor. And so you then have to work out who's going to administer the estate. Yeah.
Very interesting legal talk back with you here on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland. 1300 222 612 is the number. Although I think we are going to find ourselves out of time. Let's see, Ian in 8 Mile Plains, you may be our last caller. We'll see. Can you encapsulate your question?
Yes, thank you. My son has a rental property at Sunshine Coast and the tenants began conducting a business from those premises. He turned a blind eye to that, but there was some repair work that needed to be done. So they asked that it not be interrupting the business, so the repair work was only done on, I think it was either 2 or 3 days a week instead of the 5. The tenant is now threatening to sue for the disruption to the business, and talk of $7,000, so of course my son is rather worried.
Okay, it's all a matter of context. If the lease doesn't permit the operation of the business from the premises, then it doesn't. But if your son has acquiesced in his own breach, then he's got a problem there. The other issue is whether or not the council bylaws allow that particular tenant to operate the business from those premises in the first instance. So that's something that you need to be looking at. And if the tenant consents to the repair work on the property occurring on those days, then I find it difficult as to how the tenant can then claim that your son is at fault for that loss of business, but it's all about context.
Just to put this in context, it's actually general advice we're giving, and the best thing you can actually do, or your son can do, is go and speak to a legal practitioner who's experienced in this area and get some advice, giving them all of the detail and all of the context.
Yes, everything that we've discussed is, of course, general in nature because we don't have the capacity to go into detail about any of this. So this is basically your launch point if you've had any advice or taking any information. It's kind of launching point into the legal problems that we're talking about rather than the end point for most. Thank you so much for being here with us and discussing these issues. It's been very interesting. Bill Potts is the Queensland Law Society President. Christine Smythe is the consultant lawyer for Robbins Watson Solicitors. Interesting to see laws changing around us all the time. Lots of headlines over the last week or so about different laws, you know, popping up and being considered. One in particular, you've got a public forum on Soon on voluntary assisted dying. If people are interested in this, what are the details?
It's going to be on the 15th of October at about 7:30 a.m. in the morning at 179 Ann Street, which is Law Society House. This is an area where many people have personal experiences. Sometimes people have very strong moral and religious views. But the most important thing about law is that it has to represent the views of the community. So any debate, any discussion is an important stepping off place so that the public can be better informed in making sure the laws do in fact represent what is both good and proper in their own lives.
Thank you so much for being here with us today and for answering all those questions. Really appreciate it.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Bill Potts.